want to hear about
Continental Camp. Continental Camp was a class action involving ERISA, which is the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. And I had just come home from an incident I wasn't taking any sort of class action cases. I thought they were very arduous and time-consuming, and I had not had what I considered to be really pleasant experiences with them. And I had decided I wasn't going to try any class action. And I had just come home from the hospital. I had been involved in a case which was a lot of pressure. I'd been taking a lot of aspirin, and I wound up having a stomach bleed, and I wound up in the hospital in shock. And I'd been in the hospital for 2 or 3 days. It was bad enough I had a blood transfusion. I'd come home from the hospital, and I'm home for like maybe an hour, and I get a call from a lawyer, Dan McIntyre, who's now a dear friend, said, I have to see you, I have to come out to see you. It's very important, it's about this case. He came out together with a then associate of ours, his name was Tom, is Tom Betts, he's now a priest. Dear young man. They came out to the house, I wasn't even back at work yet, and Dan McIntyre, who worked with the steel workers at that time, with the labor lawyers, proceeds to tell me about this case. Class action involving a number of workers at Continental Cane claims, whereby a claim had been made that the company systematically and secretly was terminating these people just before they would become vested in pension plans for what were called magic number benefits, certain really good benefits that the steel workers had. And I said, Dan, you know, I appreciate your asking me, but I've just, you know, just been on board for 3 days. I just had to think it was a three, so I have to go back to work. Plus, I'm not going to handle any more class action. You have to let me talk to you about it. So anyway, he did. And he talked for about 3 hours, telling me of the plight of these workers, and this is the first time anybody had ever brought such an action, and the reason he had to have a lawyer is because there might a conflict had come up with the steel workers, and he had brought this case of his grandchild, and he had to have someone like me, and he'd heard about me, and there was nobody else who could do it, and how important it was. And somehow he talked me into it. I said I fell in love with his mind. he has a brilliant legal mind, and it was not only that, but he had such heart. You could see how he really cared about these workers. Oh yeah. And Tom Betts, you know, said he would work with me on the case, and so I finally agreed to undertake this case. So it had started in 1981. This was 1983. The case is still going on. We finally got paid our fee a couple of years ago. We undertook that case. It was a huge amount of work. It was fought tooth and nail by the men. And then there was a companion case that was in New Jersey, but in any event, to wrap it up, we tried it. I tried it with Tom, and Dan sat and consulted with us here in the Western District. We thought we should have won. The judge made every finding in our favor, but at the end held against us on a legal ground. We appealed to the circuit court, which is right under the Supreme Court, which reversed on the basis of the judge's findings, saying, here are all the findings, and that doesn't mean the judge had it wrong. You win. And so we won that case, and that was in 1987. Mm-hmm. And then finally, that was on liability. We finally had hearings on damages. Anyway, the entire case was settled, my part of it, and the nationwide class action for $450 million.
Oh, my God. That's so much money.
Yes. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful thing. These class members were so, so grateful. They never expected to see any money.
Right.
Companies certainly swore they were never going to give them any money. And they did. And it's been fun. I go through a lot of class actions, but just recently, in the last couple of years, I did a case for the workers here who had been terminated by the Pittsburgh Press. Same kind of case. An ERISA case. Well, it wasn't discrimination. They hadn't paid 10% of it, so we got 10% of it.
Your landmark cases are in favor of students. You should be so proud, you know. All three were to right wrong, and that's the message.
It's a privilege to be able to
but how wonderful that that's what you did.
It is. Like, marvelous. I care about these.
That's really marvelous. The other thing, very quickly,
yes,
the Roscoe Pound Award.
Oh. Well, I was really gratified. You know, I've been teaching for years. I teach TriLab because after my first 3 years teaching evidence, I finally persuaded the people at the law school that we ought to have a course in trial advocacy. They had never had one.
Right.
And I finally persuaded them that I said, look, they've got one at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And so they finally allowed me to start a course.
They designed the course.
Oh, I designed the course. They didn't have such a course. There was no course like that in Western Pennsylvania. I mean, they just didn't teach trial advocacy. And I thought it was really important to teach this. I was a trial lawyer, and I knew. I had never been taught. I learned by trial and error. And they said, well, it wasn't a necessary course. Your evidence and contracts and torts, they were property, but not trial advocacy. But I finally persuaded them to let me do it. And so I started teaching trial advocacy. I still do.
Okay.
I still do. I've taught it every year since, although now I teach it only in the fall because it's a big commitment of time. But just a couple of years ago, I was really pleasantly surprised to be notified by the American Trial Lawyers Association that they have this Roscoe Pound Award given to the teacher in the country who is the most effective trial advocacy teacher, and that I had been selected to be the recipient of the award. You can see the crystal thing over there.
And that was in 1996.
Right, that was in 1996. Unfortunately, David was in the hospital. The meeting was down in New Orleans. And so it was kind of bittersweet. We thought it could be all right at that time, but I couldn't spend any time in New Orleans. I just flew down. I was there, you know, half of the time I was on the phone with David, and I got the award for that. But it was very thrilling.
And you lost him when? I think we need to get that.
May 29th, 1996.
Right. And it's a very new time of life for you.
Yes. Right.
Is there anything you want to add? Anything you want to tell us?
Well, yeah.
Tell us.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little choked up now, stuff thinking about David, but I think that if anybody ever listens to this tape after I'm dead, or if they can do it while I'm alive, I have really been very, very privileged and very fortunate all my life. I've been lucky at things that happened by way of luck. I had wonderful family. My parents were wonderful people. I had a really happy childhood. It's nice to be able to achieve things having had a happy childhood.
Right.
I had really reinforcing parents. And I was really fortunate to. David was just the most wonderful partner, husband, and lover, and friend, and fellow parent. We've been very lucky. I think especially good, they're good people. They all have good hearts.
I'm going to interrupt you 1 minute. I know that Brucey's going to have a 12 o'clock appointment. We know that Harry is teaching. He's teaching at Georgetown.
At the law school. Harry, he works at the Justice Department. Right. He's a Deputy Assistant Attorney General. But he's teaching at Georgetown, and he just got his evaluations back, and he's apparently a wonderful, wonderful teacher. Jessica, my daughter, teaches at Wayne State, and she's just been offered a position, and they're going to Washington. Her husband is also a law professor. She's been asked to teach intellectual property, copyright, the internet, all that kind of law.
She's a lawyer also.
She's a lawyer, and she's going to be teaching at the Law School at American University.
Oh, that's terrific.
And Hannah is a teacher, married to a lawyer, and she's going to become a principal, and I'm sure she's a very effective, warm, loving teacher.
Where does she live?
She lives in Fallsburg, New York.
Okay. That's a brief. Have you grandchildren?
Yes. My Hannah has the middle child has the oldest one, Joshua 5, and Elijah, well, his name's Jesse, but they call him little Jesse Elijah, who, Joshua's 7, Elijah's 5, and Jessica has a little boy, Ari, who's 2.
And you have 3 grandsons.
I have 3 grandsons. I'm hoping my son gets married soon and has a bunch of children. Some of them will be girls.
I hope so.
I could use a granddaughter.
And smart like you.
that's a very nice thing to say.
This has been truly wonderful.
Oh, it's been wonderful for me.
Wonderful.
I've enjoyed it.
And I'll see. You have my word of honor that you get to take.
Okay, I'll sign this. I'm gonna write an asterisk here that I
do something legal.
What I'm gonna say is that I may also use the tape. For me personally.
You want a coffee?
I'm going to have a coffee.
You go ahead, and I'll clean up.